I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
In the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, the best Jew in the world, CM Juice, and this is episode 34 of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews. And this week, it's January, it's Royal Rumble month. You know what that means,
ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the main event! Let's get ready to rumble!
Yes, let's rumble, young man, rumble, as we continue Rumble Month here, as we take a look at the Royal Rumble of 2003. Among other things, or should I say the 2003 Royal Rumble, is probably a better way to say that pay-per-view name. By the way, this is the only wrestling review site that is brought to you by somebody who's actually wrestled a squirrel. I can officially say that now. As this past week, I actually had to wrestle this girl that had gotten into our house and got to my bathroom and somehow got into the wall. So it was a very strange squirrel. It had a Pepsi logo on its shoulder. It had two X's on it on its little hands. And it kept calling itself CP Monk. But yeah, so... yeah, I've been backed up on some things, including doing this podcast, which is what I'm doing the last minute. So I apologize if anything seems stressed out. I've had a very stressful week the past week dealing with that little fucking rascal. Anyways, like I said, tonight we are taking a look at the 2003 Royal Rumble. Now, I really think that this Royal Rumble is significant because if you look at errors as a span of 5 years each, most people feel, well, not the entire year, but for the most part consider 1997 as a whole to be sort of the start of the Attitude Era. So now, if you look at it that way, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001. Now if you look at 2002 as sort of a, and even if you look, it started in 98 and included 2002 was definitely a transitional year. with the influx of new wrestlers because of the merger with WCW. Of course, in 2001, they had gone through the merger storyline, and you had a lot, and there were a lot of things changing, in particular with the brand extension, with two different brands, with Eric Bischoff taking over Raw, and with Stephanie taking over SmackDown. And there was definitely a distinctive, different feel to the two brands. You know, and I was thinking about it as I was watching Rumble. Really, if you look at Raw, Raw was really sort of a bigger mix of sort of that WWE and ECW style. As there were a lot more ECW stars. And while there were WCW stars on there, like Booker T, and you had people like Lance Storm or William Regal, it felt like it fit more of that hard-nosed, like, rough-and-tumble sort of style, of the rough-and-tumble heavyweight style, which is very odd considering there was a fair number of number of heavyweights on SmackDown with Undertaker, Lesnar, A-Train, Big Show. But, like, when you have Rikishi, but it was more of that, you know, those big guys, a lot of them, even Big Show at the time, had a lot more finesse to them as big guys. They were more quick, they were more agile. There was more of that hard-hitting style on Raw. Even with the smaller guys like Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, coming back, had more of a rough style. I mean, you had Kevin Nash that was there as a part of that time. So, with Triple H, and you just got Skinner and Test, RVD, you know, again, as much of a high flyer as he was, again, had a bit more of a hard hitting style. There's a very unique, that really rough and tumble style that Raw had, and then you had more of the speed and the finesse, definitely showcasing a lot of the smaller wrestlers on SmackDown. And while some people may argue that and look at it as WWE keeping smaller wrestlers down, the fact of the matter is all those wrestlers, you know, Edge, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, all the Cruiserweights, they all made SmackDown unique. I can say without a fact, is in particular, the point I'm getting to is that 2002, even if it's considered part of the Attitude Era still, was a transitional year into the Ruthless Aggression era, which I feel really did start in 2003. Because I feel the transition had been made enough, and you saw it, I think, when we reviewed Armageddon 2002, of it really starting to become what we know as the Ruthless Aggression era. And I mean, really, I think, I'll even say, yes, this is me being a C-Nazi, so, but I would even say that, really can say the official start of the Ruthless Aggression era was the debut 4 months, what was it, 4 months early? Because I think it was like, what, October when he made his debut? But the I'd have to look it up when he made his debut, because he is in the Rumble. But when John Cena debuted against Kurt Angle and said, Ruthless Aggression. I'm sorry, he made his debut on June 27th. For some reason, I was thinking it was October. It was a Halloween. You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking about when he debuted his rapper character, which was in Halloween. But when he said that, that's when the transition into the... That's why I say, because they're 97, that... I'm getting into semantics here, which is beyond the point. But anyways, I think Royal Rumble 2003 is really the first big pay-per-view that I would consider under the Ruthless Aggression era. And I remember loving the Ruthless Aggression era. And as I was getting to the point to with SmackDown, was that during the Ruthless Aggression era, I thought SmackDown was the better show compared to Raw. Or at least up until John Cena. Yeah, yes, I know. Me being a C-Nazi, but that aside, up until John Cena then joined Raw, and then Raw became this different beast altogether and started taking over the ratings. But, you know, and that, again, that was because And I was going to make the comparison. It was more like WCW and WWE more combined in a way. And again, showcasing the cruiserweight. Because again, really that's what it was the home of the cruiserweights. It's part of the reason why I say not having a, call it what you will, cruiserweight, light heavyweight, not a junior division, not having a division, not having time to showcase smaller wrestlers and giving them a title or something for them to compete on their own, having to have the smaller wrestlers compete all the time with the big men hurts them, I think. And it's not sitting there saying that Sin Cara or Kalisto or any of the young guys that WWE has right now can't be in that main event picture. But they all, everybody can't face John Cena, everybody can't face Randy Orton, everybody can't be in the main event of the card. They have to have their own segments, and they have to shine in their segments. I think it is one of the problems. I think that's kind of what Vince McMahon and some of the other people are trying to say about this new crop of wrestlers is that it seems like everybody wants to be in the main event. And don't get me wrong, you love that everybody wants to be in the main event. But you don't put 110% into your, you know, segment and then expect to be put in the main event. How the Hardys became so famous is they didn't care whether they were considered the main event or not. They considered their segment to be the main event. And so the Hardys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys went out and stole the show. Same for all the other wrestlers, in particular during this ruthless aggression era. You know, that's why I disagree with the whole idea that because WCW got bought, that was the end, and WWE faltered in quality because they weren't being chased anymore. I think it was more of a fact that, you know, as wrestlers started, you know, getting older, and I mean, there's tons of things, and that's, I think, a story for a different time. Again, it's getting beyond the point of this pay-per-view review, but again, I think the main point I wanted to add was that this is really the start of the ruthless aggression era. So let's get into our review proper. The 2003 Royal Rumble by WWE, featuring the brands of Raw and SmackDown, the theme song was Falling Apart by Trust Company, sponsored by PlayStation 2, taking place in Boston, Massachusetts, at the Fleet Center, with an attendance of 15,338, taking place on January 19th, 2003. What a great time to come out with this review on the exact day of the, let's see, 12th anniversary of this Royal Rumble. Yes, folks, on this day in 2003, the 2003 Royal Rumble took place. So, with your co-color tuners of good old JR and Jerry King Lawler for Raw, Michael Cole and Taz for SmackDown, and for the Royal Rumble match itself, of course, JR and the King. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the 2003 Royal Rumble. Sunday Night Heat match, Spike Dudley versus Steven Richards with Victoria. Spike Dudley won again. Not going to get into it too much because can't watch it. Not part of the pay-per-view and they don't have heat up. So our first match of the evening is Brock Lesnar as a face versus The Big Show with Paul Heyman. You know, for an opening match, I felt this was a very, very good opening match. Not too long, not too short. Again, told the story, and part of the story was that the winner of this match would get entered into the Royal Rumble match. So, again, good back and forth between them. It was just a heavyweight slugfight. For the most part, this was the match that we expected to see at Survivor Series 2002. I actually give it up to WWE. They had this great little storyline of building up to this. We thought we'd get this at Survivor Series, but Paul Heyman would turn on Lesnar in that one. And then that kind of extended the storyline. This was, I think, the natural evolution of the storyline. In particular, what they were also doing, adding Kurt Angle and Team Angle into the mix. The whole idea that everything that had happened was part of a swerve. It wasn't Big Show that Paul Heyman betrayed Lesnar to go to. It was Kurt Angle. I just remember that being such a great storyline. I think that they did a good job with their video packaging. And that's something I'll review here, too, is in particular during this time, I thought WWE did a great job with their video packaging before matches, for particular matches, because it would tell you the entire story that you needed to know for anybody who may have not been watching SmackDown and not been watching Raw and was just watching the pay-per-views. So I think you were given enough of the story to have some emotional investment in it. But for anybody who did watch it, like me, and can remember it, I'm like, it was a damn good storyline that kept me tuned in every Friday night and every Monday night. Well, the Raw storyline is definitely... Well, like I said, the Raw storyline is maybe not so much... I mean, you had the Shawn Michaels storyline with Triple H going. And of course, you were cheering for Booker T and you wanted to see Triple H lose... But with that being said, it was really the SmackDown storylines that really had me excited. Again, I said it. I was a SmackDown guy during this time. So, again, not too long, not too short. Had a good back and forth between the two. And, of course, a great ending with Brock Lesnar lifting up the Big Show, hitting him with the F5 to get the win. Had a satisfying conclusion to sort of their rivalry for that moment, because little did we know later this year they would have I won't say match of the year, but at least the holy fuck shit moment of the year. but that's for a later date. Anyways, nice solid match, and thoroughly enjoyed. Very good opening match, got the crowd into it. Our next match, it got the crowd into it, but I don't know if it was necessarily a good match. I have my issues with it. Our next match was for the World Tag Team Championship. And it was the champions of William Regal and Lance Storm versus the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray Dudley and Devon Dudley, who had gotten back together. This is the one part where the video packaging doesn't work, and if... Well, because they really didn't do any, and because of that, you're really left confused. Wait a minute, I thought he was on another brand, and now they're back together. Was there a trade? Was there something? I don't know. Anyways, it's the Dudley Boys kicking ass. Because that's what they pretty much do. They pretty much kick Lance Storm and William Regal's ass the entire match. And I guess that's my issue with it is, yeah, they're a heel team, and part of their gimmick at this point was the fact that William Regal would need to use the brass knucks to win. But at the same point in time, it was no more than a month ago they were on this winning streak based just off their wrestling. I mean, mind you, they would use heel maneuvers, but they were still made to look strong. And here, now they're not made to look strong at all. That's the issue I have with the match, is that throughout it all, I think they look too weak. You know, it's one thing to make them look like they're desperate to retain their championship through any means possible because, yes, the other team is the better team. But you can still make them look strong through that, and they don't think they did that. This was part of some larger storyline that was dealing with Eric Bischoff and, you know, the Captain Corleone or... I just had his name a little while ago. But basically Val Venus, who was sort of the second command of Eric Bischoff, it was involved in the storyline that it's very confusing. And I think it makes sort of the whole match feel confusing. At the same point in time, it didn't hurt because, again, it was the faces absolutely dominating every aspect of the match. And in this fact, it was the Dudley Boys. An absolute crowd favorite. Whooping ass. Getting one over on William Regal and Lance Storm. You know, William Regal takes out the Brass Knucks and then walks right into a 3D. And then Devon takes up the Brass Knucks. And while Bubba is concerned, while the referee is dealing with Bubba and the commish, he knocks Lance Storm the hell out with the Brass Knucks and gets the 1-2-3. So, entertaining. We have new World Tag Team Champions. But again, it's involved in this storyline that's very confusing because, again, this continues. I think one of the problems with the World Tag Team titles as opposed to the WWE Tag Team Championship was that the World Tag Team Championship, just like, at this time, there wasn't a lot of long reigns. There was a lot of short, like, 2-3 week reigns. And mind you, you kind of had that. And it's sort of when the tag team division became big during, you know, the Hardys and, you know, Edge and Christian and the Dudleys. But again, that was because of sort of one-upmanship, and there was a uniqueness to where it felt natural. Like you had these three equal teams that could win on any given day. And so there was build-up and everything to it, and it just continued to build and build and build. You don't have that thing here, because you have... Because some of these teams are thrown together, like Booker T and Goldust. As much as I like Booker T and Goldust, and, you know, Regal and Lance. So, and mind you, these pairings worked well together, but, again, it didn't have the sort of same chemistry as the Hardys, Edge and Christian, and the Dudleys did when they were having their sort of three-team rivalry. And then, of course, you had some other teams thrown in there to mix it up a bit, to make it feel natural. And it's not that they were as good as them, but again, I mean, it's the unfortunate thing to where tag teams, I think, will always be compared to that sort of three-team rivalry that went on. But again, it's still the fact that the sort of the quick title reigns didn't feel completely natural. Our next match is, much safe to say it, it's kind of a train wreck. I mean, it's also the pick. I can speak. Not only can I not say numbers, I can't say piss break. I can say pick break. I can't say piss break, apparently. But no, this was apparently the piss break of the evening. Tori Wilson versus Dawn Marie. Which, on its own, doesn't sound unique. By the way, I'm just going to say right here, Tori Wilson wins, sort of shocker. Part of the story... part of the reason I call it a train wreck is the storyline. And I'm really twisted about how I feel about the storyline. I remember the storyline. I do remember being invested into it. And the storyline itself had a lot of emotion. It's just... I think we talked about this with Vengeance. About the storyline. About, you know, I'm into it. And I'm invested into it. And I feel for Tori. And you definitely feel the emotion. It's not just about, hey, we look good in a fucking bikini wrestling gear. And see here, look at my boobs. There was actually emotion. It wasn't just, hey, we're teasing you with hot lesbian action. There was an actual story. And Dawn Marie was an absolute villain throughout the story. But it's like... it's a storyline that made you really feel uncomfortable. And maybe that was the point of it. And if that's the point of it, then the storyline absolutely worked. And you felt the emotions and you felt for the wrestlers. They're not, obviously, they're not the best group, but I thought Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson did put on a very, at least, decent match. And, you know, at the end of the day, I've always said this. I've talked about how there are women wrestlers and there were divas. And they were two different. And there was nothing wrong with a wrestler being a diva. It just meant that they weren't as good of wrestlers than women wrestlers. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're valets. They're, you know, part, I think, what a diva's persona should be is more of the, you know, I'm looking good, more of the, they're more of the, I don't want to say actresses, because, I mean, Trish Stratus and Lita were great actresses at what they did and told some great stories as well. But there was something more emotional, something more soap opera-esque to diva storylines, in particular during this era of SmackDown, that had you invested on a whole different level. So they didn't need to necessarily have this five-star match. It was part of the storyline. It was very much like what it was in the Attitude Era, as opposed to what you had on Raw with Trish. I can speak tonight. Excuse me. I apparently need a drink of water. H2O. He's so good. Maybe now I can speak. Trish Stratus and, you know, Lita and Victoria, their storyline was all surrounded more athletic-based and more about wrestling. And both are absolutely competent in two different ways, two different storylines that are both engaging on their own ways. I just think that because one required wrestling to be more part of the storyline, which was the Raw ones, which was, you know, Trish and Lita and them, wrestling was a huge part of their storyline because it was all about competition. And so they need to have very good matches. These were more soap opera-esque storylines that didn't require necessarily five-star matches. Now, that doesn't mean that the matches sucked. If this match absolutely sucked, mind you, I'll call it that it sucked. That being said, I thought we were given just enough to be satisfied with these wrestlers. Because again, they're not the best wrestlers. And this, I think, showed a great strength to the WWE. Okay, these two women, they're not good wrestlers, but we can put them in a storyline, and if they do a decent enough job with their match, it will work. And it did work. Of course, Tori would be involved in a storyline again later this year, a pay-per-view, which I've already reviewed that, I'll call it the event of the year. Oh my god, 2003 was such an awesome year. I really love, if you can't tell, I really enjoyed 2003 as a year of wrestling. I was so into wrestling at this point. But solid match, but definitely this was the piss break. But I think, I'm not going to say that it doesn't deserve to be a piss break, because if you're not invested in the story, and sure enough, there were people who weren't, and it's their prerogative, you know, they're not going to be interested in it. But for those who were, and I think, you know, there were a lot of women who were. Because again, it's sort of like, again, like I said, it's very soap opera-esque. It's like, she's sleep. I mean, really, when you think about it, for those who don't know, the storyline was that Dawn Marie was basically started dating and got engaged to Tori Wilson's father. Of course, she was using that to basically get back at Tori because she was lusting after Tori, which included a, you know, if you come to my room, of course, this was during Armageddon, but if you come to my room tonight and, you know, do whatever I say, you know, I won't marry your father. And of course, she videotaped it and showed a lot of, and hinted at some hot lesbian action, as Eric Bischoff would say. Of course, they never showed the full video. Boo. And then, of course, led to, you know, they do get married and they have the whole, that she comes back sad because there's, and they showed this whole video of, you know, they had their honeymoon and they did it all night long. Which led to Tori Wilson's dad apparently dying of a heart attack And then there was a whole... And I think that's really the funeral scene, the funeral part of the storyline, that's where it really, really got uncomfortable. And it's like, they're really, really pushing it. And again, really when you look at that, it's very soap opera-esque. I could completely see this storyline. I mean, sans the wrestling part. If you just look at the story aspect of it, it's very much like something that could have been on Days of Our Lives or, you know, as the WWE turns. So if you're into that stuff, you were into this match. If you weren't, piss break. So it's a, I don't want to say controversial, but it's very polarizing match is a better way to say it. Wow, I went more in depth in that match than I thought I would. Anyways, let's move on to... Now, there's a reason, mind you, I also called it a piss break, because after that, we had three more matches, and there are the two title matches in the Royal Rumble. Our next match is Scott Steiner versus Triple H, the current World Heavyweight Championship, World Champion, excuse me, for the World Heavyweight Championship. I'm going to say this. This match and the other title match are about the same length, yet one feels longer and the other feels like it went by quick. Take a guess which one. I'm not going to let you take a guess. It's this one. These are two two completely opposite to matches. And there's a reason one match is, to my mind, was the match of 2003 and one of the most underrated, greatest matches in WWE history. Add one, I just got almost forgotten that it ever happened. Here's a clue. This is the one that everybody probably forgets even happened. And now I hate to say that because, Scott Steiner did a very good job in this match. Triple H was Triple H as he always is. He is the game. And he is a great performer. And Ric Flair was being Ric Flair. Woo! But it was just very slow. It just showed Scott Steiner being dominating for a lot of the time. Triple H getting a few shots here and there. But it was all really about the sort of like, Triple H really just didn't want to face Scott Steiner. And the bigger storyline was, both Scott retain his anger. Triple H trying to get disqualified. And like Earl Hebner like, no, I'm not going to disqualify you. Stop it and wrestle. And mind you, that's the thing with this match, is that this match was done to make Scott Steiner, who had just entered the WWE, feel like this really strong wrestler, which he was, and not strong just in strength, but like, okay, he's an instant main event wrestler. And I think ultimately it hurt Scott Steiner in the long run for his, work in WWE, because he really peaked. Now, I'm sure a lot of girls have said that, being with Scott Steiner. Oh! I do that joke with all jokiness, because he could probably tear my head off. Anyways, but yeah, he is the big bad booty daddy, and he's got you hooked up. It was fun to see Scott Steiner doing all the suplexes and all of that stuff, and everything you knew Scott Steiner for. He was one of those WCW wrestlers who didn't come over immediately. And I would think that, again, I haven't seen the match, so I'll have to wait and see if they maybe had a better match at No Way Out. But at the same point in time, it's like, okay, this is just the first match as part of this little feud that's supposed to carry over to carry time till they get to WrestleMania and whatever storyline they're going to start with there, which would be a match they would have with Booker T. Who ultimately, Booker T was huge at this point and definitely deserved to be in a main event. Again, Booker T, Booker T, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Rey Mysterio, there were a number of wrestlers who were climbing the ladder who had been from WCW, who had you know, beaten back the stigma of them being WCW guys and showcase that they could be main event talent. And, you know, this Scott Steiner just entered. And so, again, it just, there's not a lot of pace to it. These are this. I mean, World Heavyweight Championship, I think, is a perfect name for this because both these wrestlers are very slow and methodical. And there's nothing wrong with being slow and methodical, but at the same point in time, there's just no pace to it. And again, like I said, I was absolutely a SmackDown guy, and this is, the pace was just too slow. It felt like a snail's pace. This match is actually shorter by a minute, and I want to say 36 seconds. 46 seconds. I think, 36. So, a minute and 36, and then our next match. But like I said, the next match feels like it was shorter than this match, and this match felt like it went on for like a half hour. While the next match felt like it went 10, 15 minutes at most, and yet the next match went 20. And it had such a fast pace to it. Now, let's get to the next match, because I have a lot to talk about with that match. So, needless to say, it was a good match, but it was just the pace was just so slow with Scott Steiner and Triple H. Triple H, of course, retains by getting eventually disqualified. And I think that's also something that had partly to do with it, him being disqualified finally with the sledgehammer. But let's get to, before we get to our next match, I'm going to talk a long time about this match. So, need some water. Whew. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you one of the most underrated matches in WWE history. And I say underrated because, for other reasons, of course, it's not talked about anymore. But this, I think, it's definitely one of my favorite matches of all time. I think it's one of the greatest matches in WWE history. Because any match that has a standing ovation for the loser after it has to be. I am, of course, talking about the next match. The WWE Champion Kurt Angle, who comes out with his team Angle, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, who are soon at the beginning of the match thrown out, mind you. So they really don't have any advent in the match. It's a stand-up one-on-one. But the Kurt Angle, the current WWE Champion, versus Chris Benoit for the WWE Championship. Oh my god, this match was fucking awesome. The pace was fast and had all this intensity and all this emotion to it. And that's something that was lacking from the Steiner Triple H matches. I felt there was no intensity, no emotion. It's like, we're playing these big buff characters and I'm gonna throw you, whoop! Like, but there's, like, just intensity and just, like, the pace was just non-stop. And you felt like it could end at any moment. You had all these near falls. And it was mat-based. And it was, you know, while you could sit here and say that Steiner versus Triple H was entertaining, it was sports entertainment. This right here, this was WRESTLING. Wrestling. Just back and forth. Two mat generals. With Kurt Angle eventually getting the win with this I think was the first time where he actually had to grapevine somebody into the ankle lock. That would become a signature of Kurt Angle, to where if Kurt Angle really had to win a match and was, you know, really hit, it became sort of an honor for Kurt Angle to have to put the grapevine into you. Because when he would grapevine a leg for the ankle lock, you know, like he would do with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 21 and other superstars, that was big. That meant, you know, like, Kurt Angle really had a lot of respect for you. And this, I think, was the first place where it can't, like, and this was a war. I mean, oh my God, the submissions attempts, the near falls, the spots. I mean, the sense of one-upmanship. Kurt Angle rolling through the crossface and turning it into an angle slam for Benoit, flying all the way, basically diagonal corner to corner, not coast to coast. Literally, Kurt Angle is literally like laying on his back, almost basically in one corner of the ring. Benoit gets to the diagonal one, leaps and does the flying headbutt all the way across the ring, hits the flying headbutt, it's like, holy shit, he flew. And then, of course, the German suplex, you know, one-upmanship, you know, Benoit hits the German on Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle does a standing switch. Hits a German on, you know, Benoit. Mind you, and they've been hitting each other with Germans all match long. Standing switch by Benoit. Benoit does a super release German suplex, and Kurt Angle lands flat on his goddamn motherfucking face. It's like, oh my God. That's it. He's dead. It's over. And then I believe, comes the flying headbutt. Like, by the way, Michael, this was match of the night, and Michael Cole and Taz did an absolutely spectacular job calling this match. I mean, holy shit. The call of the night. Call of the goddamn year, possibly. I mean, just an amazing call. Cole did a great job, I think, telling you exactly what was happening in the match. Taz adding the color commentary was spectacular at this point. And it's like, oh my God, the back and the emotion, the intensity, and, you know, the counter after counter after counter. It's like, this is what real wrestling is for. To put it in a way, I think we can more recently have put it, like, this is like on the same level of Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. This was, it's 3 weeks into the new year and I need to go buy more pants because I no longer have any clean pants anymore. I have jizzed through all my pants. That's how good this match was. And, you know, it's really sad that we can't talk about this match more when you have WWE countdowns and all that stuff, because, you know, we have to treat Chris Benoit the way we treat him. You know, I made mention to this a couple weeks ago that I'd talk more about this, and I think this is where I wanted to talk about it. I think it's absolutely wrong, the fact that we can't. You know, Chris Benoit was a major part of the WWE. I mean, he's the major part of a WrestleMania. And again, I keep saying this, we don't know what happened that night. We know who killed who, but we don't know motive. We have a bunch of people speculating on motive. And we don't know. We don't know what happened. I think Christopher Nowinski, there are things I agree with him on, things I don't. But especially now that we treat concussions and all of that stuff the way we do, why we don't go back and revisit, like, well, if we know this about concussions now, and we know that he had a lot of concussions, you know, could he be a victim of concussions? But we're not going to go in because the media has made the decision that Chris Benoit was this secret homicidal serial killer, whatever they want to call him, and we can't talk about him because, you know, well, I'll put it this way. Our favorite, lovely, you know, always shows up for his matches, Mr. Phil Brooks, back when he was employed with WWE at, I believe it was at a Comic-Con, somebody brought up the question. And he talked about, well, you know, you need to understand, we can't promote Chris Benoit. Because it would be wrong, you know, with what he did, it's wrong to promote him. And I sat there, I'm like, we're not asking you to promote him. Hell, we're not asking you to even promote... I mean, we're not asking you to promote what he did, but he was a major part of your company, and you're not promoting doing bad things if you talk, you know... Why is it so hard to sit there and say, like, here's Chris Benoit, he was one of the best wrestlers WWE had, and this is what happened to him. And this is how the world looks at him now. Why? Because he took, you know, and you can bring steroids into this because of your steroids, because of concussions. This is why your health is important. This is why it's important to always get checked out with a doctor if you're feeling dizzy. And there's so many things that can be used positively for this. I mean, I guess why I'm passionate about this is that everything I've heard from people who actually know him know that he's the guy who would never done this. So if he's this type of person, why would he have done this? There is something there that we are ignoring as a society, because it's, you know, it's part of a common thing we as a society always do. When, you know, something bad happens, we boogeyman it, we demonize it, and, you know, we demonize a person, and we, you know, we try to act like it never happened because we're so ashamed of it. Because we're ashamed horrible things happen. Guess what? Sometimes horrible things happen. You know, I look at this with the Penn State case. You know, with Ray Rice. With Adrian Peterson. You know, everybody isn't like, oh, something bad happened. We're so much better than this. So just instant punishment, and we're not going to give, you know, due process, and we're just now going to ignore and try to act like it never happened anymore. And that's not the proper way to handle things. You know, and I think a lot of this started with Chris Benoit's case of the media taking it over and the media making a decision, oh, here's how we're going to get past it, and let's just not investigate it really anymore. This is what it is. No, that's not what it is, because we don't know what it is. And there's never been a proper investigation into what it is, which is why I have a problem with it. Same thing with Penn State. It's like, well, everybody's accountable. Really? Really, everybody's accountable? You're gonna punish all the players who work so hard to earn those wins just because somebody happens to be associated with the football program? So it's fair to those kids who busted their ass to punish them for somebody who really actually wasn't even a part of their team during this period, but was associated it. But to get to these people, you're going to hurt these kids. Ray Rice is a perfect example. Yeah, you know, I think I'm getting too much into it. It's a much deeper subject then can be negotiated in just like 5 minutes. But it's like, I wanted to dive into his slightly, because, you know, Chris Benoit is still one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and I have no shame in saying that. That doesn't mean I think what he did is right. I still think what happened was absolutely horrible. But that doesn't mean I can't still have him as my favorite wrestler of all time. I don't understand why I can't. I don't understand why it's controversial. I don't understand why I can't have somebody be my favorite wrestler and say the way what happened to him, what he did on that night, on that one night, was absolutely deplorable, horrible. And he'll probably never be forgiven for it. Unless somebody actually does some, maybe some investigating, and we find out he may have not had been in the right mind or whatever. There's no evidence supporting either case at this point. But I just wish we could. I wish we could use the incident better to showcase why kids shouldn't take steroids and why, you know, concussions are dangerous. Because I do think they had a part to play in it. And I think because it's something evil and something horrible that our first instinct is to hide from it. And it's sad. Which gets away from the fact that, again, going back to this match of the goddamn year, just absolutely goddamn amazing. So I think I went all along with this, and I've sort of gotten off subject, so I apologize for that. It's like I really wanted to get into that. But needless to say, the match, which it's the second longest match of the evening, by the way. But yeah, match of the goddamn year. I haven't seen every match that happened that year, because I'll get through that as I watch pay-per-views and eventually review 2003 pay-per-views. But yeah. I mean, just absolutely spectacular. Our last match of the evening is the Royal Rumble match. So many storylines told in this Royal Rumble. I thought this was a really, really good Royal Rumble. This is one of my favorite Royal Rumbles because there's so many storylines going through it, and it, you know, it has a great pace, a lot of entertaining aspects. The fact that the match, it feels like there's three matches in this one match. Now you have the match that spans the first 11 entries and the storylines it tells. And then you have the match that then spans from entry number 12, which is Rob Van Dam. Mind you, the first 11 are from Shawn Michaels all the way to B Square, who only lasts 24 seconds. He has the shortest time in the Rumble this year. Just checking up there. Oh, then followed by Goldust. Everybody else is over a minute. But from entry number 12, which is Rob Van Dam, all the way to entry number 21, Jamal, is a different match. And then you have the final 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 entries that are the end. And like how, again, you have the exciting beginnings of the match, the end with a great climax, and then you have the middle of the match, which, you know, doesn't have really a lot of eliminations. I think I'm trying to think of who gets eliminated here. Nobody really gets eliminated from 12 to 21 until Kane comes in. They just build up, and it's building up the fodder for the end of the match for the people towards that end to eliminate. Where was I? So, really exciting match. Let's start off with that first half. You have the whole storyline that eventually would lead up to Shawn Michaels and Jericho at WrestleMania. And, you know, Shawn Michaels being number one, Jericho wanted to pump it all about him, and he wanted to go coast to coast. And Jericho doing a sneak attack on Shawn Michaels and just beating the bloody hell out of Michaels. And, of course, Christopher Lindsay is the third person who, like, oh, take your time. Take your time. And, of course, Jericho eliminating Shawn Michaels. Of course, part of this excitement was the whole thing with Rey Mysterio and Edge, the tag team coming in, and, you know, speeding up the pace, the dial-ups, the 619s, the brutal spot that I think broke Christopher Nowinski's nose, and then Rey Mysterio would eliminate him, and I think that ultimately gave him a concussion, which would lead him towards his new career path, mind you. But a solid working by Rey Mysterio there. You would have Edge, Christian, Chavo Guerrero, Tajiri, Bill DeMont, all be absolutely fantastic. Edge put on a good showing. They had Bill DeMont as eliminated by Edge. Well, really, you could say these really was eliminated by Edge and Tommy Dreamer, because Dreamer comes in with the toys, and it mind you, at this point, Tommy Dreamer does a wicked shot on Jericho that ends up giving him a knot on his forehead. It's just wicked. And I'd love to hear this. If Jericho ever listens to this, I would love to hear the story of that, because that was a wicked. That was like, it looked wicked, and just that had to hurt through the rest of that match. But yeah, just great little opening to the match for this first 11 from B Squared with these eliminations happen. You know, Edge put in a great thing. You know, Tajiri being all these eliminations being very exciting. The elimination of Tajiri, Edge eliminating Chavo Guerrero, and ultimately a point where, you know, and the whole storyline is told throughout this match of Jericho proving that he's better than Shawn Michaels, which includes him basically doing Shawn Michaels, you know, the skinning of the cat. Ed thinks he eliminated Jericho, but he holds on and he skins the cat and comes back up and then eliminates Edge and Christian right before the new countdown comes on. And he's mentioned there, like, who's next? Who's next? And boom! Rob Van Dam! And that, then you start into the second match. Which again has its own pace to it and its own uniqueness to it. And just wrestler after wrestler comes in and they have their little spots and their spots. And they do a great job of having these spots that tell the story of their character. Because again, the Royal Rumble is one of those matches where, you know, it's a showcase of the entire talent base for those who maybe had not been watching it. The Royal Rumble is one of those pay-per-views like WrestleMania that people who don't really even normally watch wrestling will buy because it's exciting. And so you have to tell a story about who you are when you enter. And so the wrestlers did a great job of telling that story as they entered. This includes John Cena, where I think there is a mistake on this page because it lists Cena at a time of... I'm going to list John Cena's time. Yes, I am a C-Nazi. I am going to fully prove this because this pisses me off. The person who did this Wikipedia, which I'm using, is completely wrong on this. But so that part was it. And then you had that third part where you had Kane come in. And Kane eliminates, let's see, three people, because he co-eliminates the A-Train with Rob Van Dam. Oh, there was, by the way, I just realized, there was one elimination that happened during that middle part, and that was Jeff Hardy by Rob Van Dam. You know, he goes for the sort of the, not poetry in motion, but the whisper in the wind, and as he goes up, RVD follows him, pushes him over, eliminating him. Which was a good spot, mind you, too. That, and by the way, Jeff Hardy had a little great entry, you know, brother. Mind you, that was also another storyline that was very prevalent through this Rumble. Every Rumble had its own uniqueness and unique storyline. I remember there was one year where it seemed like nobody could be eliminated, and it was all about the spectacular saves. And not surprising, that was one of the years that Kofi was a part of. But in this year, one thing that was unique about it was the double crosses. These alliances that supposedly are tag teams that would form, that where they would quickly turn on each other, you know, between, you know, Kane's elimination of RVD is an example of this. Of course, then very quickly followed by Undertaker's elimination of Kane, where he's like, hey, let's work together. All right. Then grabs his head and throws him over the ropes. You see this with Jericho, Christian, and Edge. You just see people work together and then the next second stab each other in the back and eliminate the person. And so it's like that unpredictability was a major aspect of this match. And it all didn't just happen with elimination. It also helped with, like, you know, meeting between people who were formerly friends or from, you know, in this case, Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy. Jeff Hardy comes in like, wait, no, it's me, your brother. We're close. It's like, and Jeff like, yeah, just keep talking. Yeah, I'm going to kick your ass. Kick to the butt. Twist the fate. Shannon Moore, the Mattitude follower, like, no, don't take out Matt. And he just lays on him. Like, all right. Swanton bomb through both of them. There's so much fun. You know, again, each wrestler just showing what makes them unique. But like I said, you have the second part of the match. You know, Kane comes in, eliminates
three people.
You have A-Train. You have all these heavy hitters that are coming, like A-Train. Maven. Maven, again, I love this. I love that they tease, you know, when Undertaker eventually comes in, Maven, like, tries to do the surprise elimination again, but he's too far the ropes. And, like, and Maven's like, woohoo! Yes! Yes! That's right! I did it 2 years in a row! And then turns around and, uh-oh. Bye-bye, Maven. Time for you to go for a ride. Chokeslam. Thrown out of the ring. It was a good... The WWE always gets points when they do things like that. When they nod stuff that had happened before. You know? They did it. It's one of the things that made WrestleMania 29 so awesome. Is that they continuously would make nods to things that happened the year before. It's like... We're keeping this in continuity. I love when continuity is remembered. But yeah, that came in. You had Lesnar came in. Lesnar eliminated 1, 2, 3, 4 people. Taker eliminated 4 people. That was actually the most... Again, that goes back to pace. And that goes back to continuity through the match. Because nobody eliminated more than 4 people. You had a tie between Taker, Lesnar, Jericho... Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, wait a minute. Jericho had 5, 6 eliminations. So Jericho technically had the most, but 6. Quickly followed by Lesnar and Taker, who had 4 each. And Kane that had 1, 2, 3. And Haas and Benjamin had 2. They eliminated Goldust and Booker. And Booker T, though, I wish that would have led to maybe them having a match together. Batista looked good. Batista had 2 solid eliminations of Test and Rikishi. Overall, good match. Now, let me get to this, because I actually wanted to get to this. The person who did this Wikipedia article did a huge mistake on this on John Cena. They list his total time in the Rumble... at 9 minutes and 38 seconds. I call bullshit on this because of this reason. John Cena came out before Jamal. He has Jamal listed at 16:07. John Cena and Jamal were eliminated basically at the same time, with Jamal only a few seconds after John Cena, both by The Undertaker. So... if Jamal is at 16:07, there is no fucking way John Cena can be 9:38. And so I did the math in my head. The proper, if the time for Jamal is right, the proper time for John Cena. And by the way, it has, and I think Jamal is right because again, about the same time as Kane, there's no way they were in there only 10 minutes. So the proper time for John Cena came to 21:04, somewhere around that, which means he had the 1, 2, 3. He had the 4th longest time in the match. Yeah. John Cena had the 4th longest time in the 2003 Royal Rumble. So to the person who did this Wikipedia or changed it or whatever, who contributed that time, fuck you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was CM2 being a C-Nazi. But all in all, I really enjoyed the Royal Rumble match. It was a satisfying Rumble. It told a lot of great stories, and it continued again. The whole storyline that was done started at the beginning of this. You had this continuity of storyline that began this Rumble was the story of Brock Lesnar trying to get to a title match. And it ended with Lesnar getting a title match. So, I really enjoyed this Rumble. Let's go into the final thoughts. Wow, I've been talking a long time. I need some more water, but that'll have to wait. So let's go over favorite moments first. Number three, Jericho skinning the cat and eliminating both Edge and Christian. That was just a great moment in the Rumble. That was very fun. Number two. Because I know what number one is. Number one, I could say that entire match, but... number two, again in the Rumble, the Swanton Bomb on two people. Not really my favorite spot, but at the same point in time, it's not second app. The pop that happened when Undertaker came out. Because Undertaker had returned. And that got a huge pop, and everybody knew it was coming. And just that moment where he came out. By the way, I wonder how many times Undertaker has been the number 30 entry. Because I think he's been the number 30 entry more times than anybody else. That being said, my number one spot is from the Benoit angle match. And it definitely was the Super Release German. I mean, oh my god, that was just... Super Release German, then followed by the Flying Headbutt. Like, oh my god, those two spots. I mean, literally, I can call the entire match, but we're going to get to that. So, those are my top three favorite moments. My top three favorite matches of the evening were at number three, which I think is the hardest to do, but the Lesnar-Big Show match, because it told a great story and was a great opener. Number two is the Royal Rumble match. And then number one is, again, the WWE Championship match between Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit. Match of the year. I think one of the greatest matches in WWE history. Just outstanding, amazing. It's like, every time I watch it, it's like when I thought, like, wow, I haven't watched this match in years, will it still hold up? And, like, not only did it still hold up, I was into it. It's like, oh my god, this is wrestling. This is wrestling. This is wrestling. If only WWE would be willing to allow itself to go back and watch this match, I'll say, like, this is what wrestling is. This is what sports entertainment is. You know, my god, is like, So that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. I apologize for being a bit preachy in some spots, but you know, that's the way the ball bounces. It's why I'm CM Jew. I tell it how it is. So if you have any emails or comments, and by the way, I did have a comment. I apologize. I forgot to get to it. Dark Mortimer, I apologize about that. I will get to it next episode. But if you have any emails or comments or anything that you want to leave for the show, that will be read on air. Remember, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show on our Stitcher account by going to www.stitcher.com. And finding the show by searching for the Absolution Network. Leave us a comment and like us there. You can also leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find by going to www.an.132productions.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page that you can find by going to Facebook and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment. By the way, speaking of our website, which is at www.an.132productions.com, don't forget to check out all the other content on the website, which, of course, includes Otaku Momentum, of course, my podcast, Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, the Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast with my good friend Edwin, along with John Ramos's Toku videos, including Toku Apocalypse, and of course, my man Shin Tiger Drill and his wrestling and fighting video game reviews, along with anime reviews. And of course, don't forget the Anycast, of course, starring Relic, whenever those episodes come out. Because I let those guys go on their own. You know? And, of course, don't forget to check out any of the other websites I provide content to. That, of course, includes the Comic Book Crazy site, which features the Comic Book Crazy podcast, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out my Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. One more thing. I'm really in a mix here, so I apologize. Don't forget to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site that, of course, includes Matty J and TWK and the WrestleCast, Michael Bailey and Fuse in the Long Box, Spidey Dude and the Clone Slinky Chronicles, and, of course, Steven Spiker, the Critical Hit Podcast, and my good friend Scott Gardner, and the 2-2 Freaks Podcast and Network. Like I said, that is it for this episode, as I got a bit ahead of myself. Next week, we still may get 5, but if I don't get the final one out, next week may very well be the last week of Rumble Month. Next week, well, we're going to 2006. As we get to take a look at another one of my favorite Royal Rumbles, and I think one of the best Royal Rumbles of all time as a card standpoint. Two solid heavyweight title matches, an absolutely spectacular Rumble match that, if it wasn't for one of the endings were, should have been the main event of the evening and got screwed out of being the main because, unfortunately, it stole its luster. But goddamn, that rumble. We will rumble, young man, rumble. As, ladies and gentlemen, next time we review the 2006 Royal Rumble. So until next time, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMG. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, they bring me down to negativity. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among the feet, one baby, brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight, and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart, and all of my soul, and all of my mind. And what's the feeling, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be for holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but you're dreaming.